DC sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Bullseye Saints Hour. Bullseye, the official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints. Mike Hoss, along with Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis. We elongate the 24-hour rule a little bit for this show because it's on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. You've had a couple of days. In the end, it's always judged in W's and L's, but you've had a couple of days. Give me your takeaways from game one.
Yeah, look, like you know, any time that you have a game, there's you walk away obviously feeling badly about the loss, but I also came away kind of encouraged, encouraged about a lot of things. You know, we had a lot of new players, moving parts, new staff, and there were some good things. You know, I thought we moved the ball pretty well. I thought we played really good defense, particularly in the second half. We had a couple of explosive plays that got away from us in the first half, led to points for them. And, you know, we had some good things that have happened that didn't lead to points for us. You know, we were one for four in the red zone, really kind of one for five, because I think we had another possession that was right at the 20. And, you know, you have to be able to score touchdowns, preferably at about a 75% clip at least, but you can't be at 25% or 20%. And so, I think that's the take. You know, I thought Spencer did some really good things, and I thought, you know, that the offensive line with a lot of moving parts there, new parts, did some good things, and yet there was just, you know, the one play, one or two plays that would have made the difference in terms of the outcome of the game.
Yeah, the red zone's a unique stat. You can get away with it sometimes if your defense is keeping them at 25%, but they were 67% in the red zone and two for two goal to go. So that you're right. I mean, it's that stat can tell a lot.
Yeah, it can tell. It does tell a lot, you know, each week, because you're going to get 10 possessions. And, you know, if you can get down at least in the scoring area on five or six of those, you're going to have a good chance to win, but not if the five or six are field goals and not touchdowns. And so I think that was kind of the story. If you looked around the league, outside of that Buffalo-Baltimore game, the scoring was, you know, there was a lot of 10 points, 13 points. 18 points, 17 points, you know, a lot of games like that. And I think that's a product really of the way teams practice and play in the preseason. You know, you're getting less reps and oftentimes at the early part of the season, the offense is behind.
It also doesn't surprise me that some crews, and I'm not going to ask you to talk about the officiating, but called it tight, like beginning of the season. Hey, we're going to call this tight. But that is an area, certainly, 13 and 89, from any team has to get cleaned up.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got, listen, a lot of those were self-inflicted, pre-snap penalties, and that's all on us. We have to get that corrected, and we will.
Spencer, you talked about it, 27 to 46, 214, only the one sack, no picks, very efficient, smart with the football, ran the offense, and really, man, ran an up-tempo offense almost the whole game. That was impressive. I would assume you're not wanting him thrown at 46 times in a game every week.
Like, no, that's not an assumption. That's a fact.
Okay.
we don't really want him to throw it 46 times. You know, again, I think when you look back at it and you just review the game, yeah, we had five sacks. That was really good. We had a lot of pressure on the quarterback, and we only gave up one sack. I thought Spencer manipulated and moved around the pocket in a good fashion that kept us from having sacks. I thought the O-line did a really good job of protection. Obviously, you know, you want no turnovers, but we want takeaways, and we didn't get those. We had I thought, a couple of, you know, opportunities that maybe to get a turnover, but it didn't happen. But again, they, you know, listen, let's give them credit. They made some plays when it counted and won the game.
I bet I was asked 15 times in the offseason, man, has Alvin turned 30? Has he lost a step? Has he lost a step? And I kept saying, no, man. If you saw practice in Metairie, for answers, no. If you saw California, no. If you saw anything, I mean, he's – and I guess to me, he was never this elusive burner from the 40, right? But it was just he's got this way of zigging when you zag and that tiptoeing down the sideline. I mean, he looks as strong and as fast and as smart as he did, you know, 4 years ago.
Yeah, you know, I would agree with that. I think, you know, his superpower is balance, and he runs really hard. He's a really, really smart player. And, you know, to his credit, he pays close attention to his body, his physical condition. He has an off-season program that he does, an individualized off-season program that he does that I don't think many guys could keep up with. That's a credit to him, and obviously we need him to be at his best, and I think that he is.
His touchdown was the 1,000th in Caesars Superdome as we celebrate our 50th anniversary. I don't know who found that stat. Amazing in and of itself, from the line of scrimmage up, you know, regular season and postseason. A lot of guys played a role in that, but it's kind of cool that Alvin is the guy that did it.
Yeah, it's... it's really a cool stat, and I, you know, it speaks to a lot of things. Obviously, you know, the players and the coaches that have designed those plays and executed those plays to score touchdowns, but it's also a product of a lot of great work by a lot of people in this state and with the team who have kept the Superdome relevant. And, you know, it's a fabulous stadium. It's still a fabulous stadium. It's been kept up to date with the renovations that have been done over the years. And it's real credit when you look around and you see places that have gone through three stadiums. That's not very efficient. Let me give the credit to my predecessors and the owners and of the team and the state and local officials who have kept the Superdome relevant and done really right by the taxpayers of Louisiana.
It's the Bullseye Saints Hour, back with more here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Back with the Bullseye Saints Hour, Mike Hoss, along with Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis. I want to go backwards a little bit. Training camp in Metairie started here, then Irvine, then the two home games. The pop-up practice, or joint practice with the Rams, invaluable. Felt like training camp, you know, couldn't have gone much better. Now, we only had one, like, 10-minute spat of rain in Metairie, and we didn't have any lightning. We didn't get forced inside. I mean, somebody told Kellen that this is not how it always is, right? But that, things went, I mean, you know, there's always some injuries, but nothing like last year.
Yeah, well, you know, a couple things there. I agree. Kellen didn't get the real August of Louisiana, late July, August of Louisiana. That was really good. We didn't have to adjourn practice and go inside not a single time. the goal was going to California was A, to get out of the heat, and B, to get a couple practices in with. Originally the Chargers, and ended up being the Rams. That's really good work for us, especially, you know, when you've got a lot of new young players and new players to the team. That was really good for us. Look, I think our injury rate has been down, and that's a credit to, you know, it's a credit to Ted Rath and the strength and conditioning coaches, our trainers. They've ramped up our sports performance and analytics in order to try to get a handle on the injuries that we've had over the last few years. A lot of it is a product of you know, dehydration and the heat and the circumstances that we have to deal with here. But we've got to adjust to that because that's not going to go away in the future. And we do need to conduct you know, a good portion of our training camp here in New Orleans. So it was pretty good from that respect.
Roster moves. You made Fadell Diggs your seventh round pick active for Sunday today. Jack Stoll to the active roster, and then re-signed Hunter and Jake, both quarterbacks, to the practice squad. I mean, the Jack situation, because of the pup with Foster and Taysom, it almost felt like if you didn't do that, you were gonna have to get, you know, unless you alternated tight ends bringing them up.
Yeah, those are just, you know, we're just manipulating and managing the roster, and we have, you know, we have tools to do that. We have the practice squad, and we have elevations off the practice squad, and we used a couple of those this week. You only get two per week, so we have to be a little bit judicious on how we use it. And we also don't want to use, for each player, they have a 3 elevation max, and so we have to pay attention to making sure we have some of those in our pocket for later in the season. So we're just managing the roster.
Wanted to talk about the end of the preseason. Typically, it's what we see. You pick up a player, you're always getting better. And maybe he's an active roster, but more times than not, maybe he's a practice squad. But this year, it was, like baseball for a while, right? Right after Jacksonville, Luke Fortner for Colin Saunders. Now, you'd already had Will Clapp and Nick Salivary, so that move, even though it happened right after the game, had been in the books, right? But you've been looking at it.
Yeah, well, you know, some of that's a product of players that we really had an eye out for over the course of the preseason, and some of it's a product of injuries. We had some injuries in the offensive line kind of in the mid to late end of training camp, and so we had to address that. We spent the entire offseason trying to bolster and improve our receiving group. We got a lot of receivers we like on the roster, but yeah, we wanted to add to that in terms of just different skill sets. So, you know, you're always looking, and sometimes there's years where, you know, a player didn't come free at the position you're looking for, or somebody in particular that you like that you think might come free doesn't. Sometimes there's trades available, and sometimes there aren't. And I felt like this year there was a lot of teams that were maneuvering their rosters around. And some, you know, if you have a strength at a particular position, it gives you some assets to bolster an area of your roster that maybe isn't as strong.
And same kind of thing with Devon Vele, pre-Denver. You get a 6'5 guy, you get Awesome Richards. These are all trades. I guess that was the kind of the difference of this picking up a guy that might have been on the waivers. But you did also, do you call it that you were awarded Trey Palmer or you claimed Trey Palmer?
Good question. Yeah. What happens is that you make these claims, right? And you're awarded based upon your priority on the list. And so if a number of teams are claiming a player, then obviously it goes to the priority list, which is determined at the first cut by the draft order.
Right.
And so, yes, we were awarded Trey Palmer.
And Xavier Truss.
Xavier Truss, yes. Devon was an interesting deal for us because we had our eye on him from the very beginning. You know, months ago, we talked about, you know, players that might be available. We knew he was never getting cut. He was a really good player for Denver. But they had a lot of receivers that they liked and a number of guys that had the size and skill set that Devon has. So, obviously, we have a relationship with the Denver people.
Yeah, but it's always felt like the other way around. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sometimes that's worked that way. But in this case, we talked to him a lot about Devon, and I know that he didn't really want to trade him, but when you have an abundance at a position, sometimes you kind of forces your hand if you get the right offer.
And you really kind of want to see, because, you know, Awesome Richards was he was signed on 8/26. He was forced into action, right? He's playing, right? Devon played, and you know, 4 weeks from now, maybe there are plays. I mean, he's your red zone guy. He got 3 touchdowns in the red zone last year, 41 catches, 26 of them were first downs. You know, these guys really have not had a whole lot of time with your team.
No, they haven't, and yet they were called into action, you know, week one. That, and look, that will improve as the season goes on, as they get acclimated to our offense and our schemes and our coaches get acclimated to them. So that will improve. But again, there's two young players that have experience at positions that you know, we felt we needed.
Take another quick break. This is the Saints Hour brought to you by Bullseye, the official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.
D.C. sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before.
Right. Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back with Mickey Loomis, Vice President and General Manager of the New Orleans Saints. This is the Saints Hour brought to you by Bullseye. Last week, he had a press conference to Ron Armstead. He was also the legend of the game. And I don't know that I've ever witnessed many press conferences like that. His family was here. It was emotional. He's a brilliant speaker and typically of what this team has always looked for, quality of the man, locker room guys. I know Mrs. Benson and you were in, and Dennis were in there for a little bit. I mean, that was something.
Yeah, it was. It really is. Now, first of all, let's start off with Teron's really something.
Yes.
He's a spectacular player for us. And, you know, if you just looked at his performance over his career, just simple facts, right? The amount of sacks and pressures that he's given up, it's in the same company as guys that are in the Hall of Fame. And but he's an understated individual at times. And sometimes it's hard for offensive linemen to get noticed, especially when you're a smaller market team. And yet, he's just a spectacular player. And one thing that I don't think people really realize how tough he was, and how many times he went out there when a lot of other players wouldn't or couldn't. I think he made reference to it in the last few years of his career. There, he was basically out there on one leg with very minimal amount of practice. I know that was the case in Miami . And really was probably the case here his last year and a half. Boy, you just can't say enough about the type of person he is. You know, on the field, he's smart, he's tough, he's selfless. He's a guy that is a multiplier. He makes everyone around him better, and he always did. And he's, I just can't say enough good things about it. I love that he cherished and valued his time with the Saints. Love that he had a love affair with the city, and that he wanted to come back and participate and kind of acknowledge all of that, because he really he retired and announced his retirement, had a retirement party earlier in the year, off of his Dolphins experience. So that part was really special.
Two more quick questions. And it does begin with Teron, and that is, you got him in 2013. Now, the ability in the FCS in 2013 is different now, because there are FCS guys all over the place. I mean, North Dakota, South Dakota, you name it, but back then, it was not as prevalent. But the difference is that the Saints don't find those guys. They look for those guys.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I remember, when Jeff Ireland was first, we first hired him, we talked a lot about, where players come from and just what the numbers look like. And, he had done a lot of studies about offensive linemen and found that the overwhelming majority were these Power Five players, and that, spending a lot of time at the smaller colleges at the smaller schools, looking for those guys wasn't an efficient use of time. And yet, you know, I had and we had this experience of Jari Evans from Bloomsburg and Jamon Bushrod from Towson State. And so I was kind of in the other category of, man, I like looking for these guys that are dominant players at their level and, you know, bring him on board. First of all, you know, generally that's going to be a mid to later round pick. And so you're getting some value and good swings at guys that you might hit home runs with. You know, Teron, in his case, that was he was championed by, you know, a couple of our scouts, Mike Bobby and one of them. This guy out of Arkansas Pine Bluff. And I remember talking about him early in the process and Mike talking about him and, hey, this guy is, man, he's a gem. He's going to be a steal when we take him, which we're thinking about as being a sixth or seventh round pick. And then Teron gets invited to the combine and runs like 4.6 something as an offensive lineman, and he does 31 reps on the bench, and he jumps 34 inches, and just out of the world numbers for a 300-pound offensive lineman. And so, well, he's not a secret anymore. We ended up taking him in the third round, but that was still a steal because he took over, you know, one of the starting positions late in his first year, and then we just never worried about it for the next, you know, basically 8 or 9 years.
And finally, it was your first look in a regular season of the Brandon Staley defense. I'm not sure what it is you're looking for, but just overall, you know, you take out those two plays, they had 179 yards of offense. And you don't get to take out those two plays, but your thoughts about this defense?
Yeah, I thought it was good, you know, for a change in scheme for us. And you know, we have some returning players on defense, and, you know, DeMario and Cam and Pete and guys that this, you know, what they're being asked to do is a little different. And I thought that, yeah, for a first game, went really well against you know, a good offense, and I would say that was a good performance, a winning type performance by the defense. But we didn't win, so, you know, it's not a winning performance, obviously. But there was a lot of good things. We got to clean up a few things, some mental errors, and a few of the penalties that happened. Some of them were circumstantial. And then, obviously, you know, you can't have explosive plays. It's going to get you beat in a tight game.
Best of luck against San Francisco. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
Let's pause 10 seconds to let stations identify themselves here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. When we come back here on the Bullseye Saints Hour, we talked about him. Now we will talk to him. Former Saints offensive lineman Teron Armstead, get his thoughts about a fantastic career and the pressure of being a rookie whose job it was to protect the blind side of franchise quarterback Drew Brees here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back to the Bullseye Saints Hour. Mike Haas along with Teron Armstead, the third round pick back in 2013, Arkansas Pine Bluff was this past weekend's Saints legend. 9 seasons with the Saints and 3 seasons with Miami. And I count them because there was no tail off, right? You made the Pro Bowl twice then. So let's kind of start somewhat at the beginning. Belleville, Illinois, right? High school was Cahokia?
Yeah, from Cahokia, Illinois. Yep.
Okay. It's on the east side of the Mississippi River, outside of St. Louis. French Canadian colonists founded the colony for a French mission back in 1696 as a Catholic mission. There's a church there, Church of the Holy Family, the oldest continuously active Catholic parish in the United States. I say all that to say this. You were destined to be along the Mississippi River from high school to the New Orleans Saints, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, can you imagine that? There's a bit of a journey in between there, yeah. But that's kind of cool, isn't it?
It is. It is. Even going from high school in Cahokia, Illinois, down the river and Arkansas, being in Arkansas at Arkansas Pine Bluff, and then eventually coming down to New Orleans in 2013, I do feel like I was destined to end up here.
Most people don't know, but the News Democrat in Arkansas, that's the paper of note, right? That's the biggie. And so in high school and college, you're track and field. They named you the track and field athlete of the year, state champion shot put, 61 and a half feet, 20.5 yards. Also did discus. And at Arkansas Pine Bluff, shot put, discus, and hammer throw. So was that part of kind of off-season training or, hey, less spring football? Well, tell me about that, because that's you weren't just doing it for the heck of it. You were very good.
Yeah, so crazy part is my junior year in high school, my high school head football coach, he said every offensive lineman will either have to wrestle or do track during the offseason. So I did track out of requirement, not because I wanted to. And my first year, I qualified for state. So I go out there, and I have no technique. I stand in the front of the ring, and I throw it, and I qualify for state. Next year, I win state, my senior year. So during that senior year, I get offers from every school in the country. But those big schools wouldn't let me play football. So if I came on a track scholarship to Florida, LSU, Miami, I wouldn't be able to play football. So I ended up going to a smaller school, Arkansas Pine Bluff, so I can do football and track. So I did football for my entire time there, and I did track for 3 years. And in track, I finished 10th in the country my junior year in the NCAA against Texas, Texas A&M, LSU, all those guys. I strongly feel, still to this day, like I always think about it, if I would have went back to track my senior year in college, I would be a national champion. I was 2 feet off from like 10th place to first place. We were 2 feet. We were all so close. And most of those guys, 8 of them were seniors. I do feel like I would have been an NCAA national champion in track.
Would you have ever considered the Olympics?
Football was always, which is why I didn't go to try to go to a big D1. College is football had always been me and a part of me and my dream. So, no, I never really thought about going. I was like a foot away from Olympic trial mark, but I never really tried to pursue that.
Arkansas Pine Bluff, you're part of the SWAC Conference. It's southeast of Little Rock, between Shreveport and Little Rock for those. You were always part of the FCS. I went to a Division I AA. James Madison University.
Yeah. I was D1 AA too.
The big FCS. I don't like FCS. I still like the word, you know. But back then, and you know, when you were in college in 2013 and all those years leading up to it, the smaller schools, you were called a diamond in the rough, right? Now, are you kidding me? FCS are everywhere. But back then, it was a big deal to go get a young man from a Division I AA school. You must have felt that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It wasn't many of us when I got out of Arkansas Pine Bluff in 2013. And it's so interesting hearing the stories here from Mickey Loomis and Ryan Pace and Terry Fontenot, the guys that were making the decisions back when I was coming out of college. And they always tell me that Ryan Pace was the one that stood on the table and made them draft me in the third round. So like it was a very big discussion. They're going back and forth. No, we got this guy from this other school. Ryan Pace was the guy that really, hey, we're taking him right now, third round. I'm bet my job on it. And he actually went to Chicago Bears as the GM. So Ryan Pace really, really, really good at what he do. He's great at what he do. He's in Atlanta now with Terry Fontenot, who's the GM of the Atlanta Falcons.
So you're close. There's when somebody stands on a table for you. I don't know if anybody's ever stood on a table for me. Or that means, you know, you're desired. That must have felt pretty good.
Yeah, no, it was great. That was definitely great. I can't thank that man enough.
So because of the small school, right? You got to make an impression. This is beyond being you, a three-time All SWAC. So you go to the combine. You're on a 4.71. I think you were 6.5, 3.05. Is that right?
Yeah.
Right. A 4.71 in the 40. Still the fastest 40 time for an offensive lineman. Also in 2013, Lane Johnson runs a 4.72. Yeah. So by a smithering, but he played last night where he played Monday night for Philadelphia, still playing. But I don't know how fast you want to be as a tackle, but that had to have made an impression.
For sure, for sure. And I needed it. I needed every bit of that to get more attention and get the eyes on my film. So with Lane Johnson, in his situation, he was a former quarterback who transitioned to tight end, who then transitioned to O-line. So, and he went to Oklahoma. So everyone knew Lane already. He was already kind of like slated to be top five, top 10 pick in that 2013 draft. So I had, when I went down the train pre-combine, I had a video of me running on the track. And my trainers made me delete it. They said, we want the wow factor. We want the shock factor at the combine. You're flying under the radar. We know Lane Johnson will be fast. He'll run fast. He'll most likely break the record. No one knows that you will. So we get to the combine, and it worked out exactly that way. I broke the record. Lane came in close second, same year. So I had my time to be like, I'm on ESPN and NFL.com and NFL Network and all those good things.
So you get drafted by the Saints, started 93 of your 97 games at left tackle, including nine postseason games. So but when you come in, Saints had won already in 2009. Your job is to protect the franchise through Brees. Welcome to the team. You know, that's just that had, you know, as you're the blindside left tackle, man, that's pressure right off the bat.
Listen, it was immense pressure. I'm coming in, this young guy, 21 years old, out of Arkansas Pine Bluff, and I'm blocking for the face, like what, literally one of the faces of the NFL, but the child of New Orleans, like the most precious item of the city.
It was not lost on you. I can tell that already.
No, not at all. Not at all. Because it actually played a part into my career. Like how I approached the game is it was low key fear. Like I feared getting Drew Brees hit or getting Drew Brees hurt. That was a true fear of mine. And I really did. I would put my life and body on the line for that man to keep him clean. He was so incredible he never once like got on any O-lineman ever. If we miss a block and we made a mistake, it was so much encouragement and just confidence building. He really like relied on us and he made our job so much easier the way he diagnosed everything. He could point out blitzes and threats that was coming. It was incredible to be able to share the field with Drew Brees and just the time I spent with him. And then we became closer off the field. Drew would come to my house. I don't know if Brees would go to anybody else's house, but he would come by the house sometimes and eat dinner or we play ping pong in the garage or we became really close. Like that's a brother of mine for life.
We will have more with former Saints offensive lineman Teron Armstead when we return. This is the Bullseye Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.
D.C. sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Bullseye Saints Hour. Bullseye, the official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints, and back with former Saints offensive lineman Teron Armstead. 2018, you played 10 games, so you hurt some in 2018, but this is your first Pro Bowl and also your first All-Pro selection. What was it about 2018? I mean, obviously the team was great, but what was it about that year you think they finally went, oh my gosh, this kid's been around for 6 years, you know, let's...
So in 2015... I was the best tackle in football, best left tackle in the game. I'm locking everybody up. I'm also playing with a knee injury. And I think I played about 14 or 15 games, but I'm just now getting on the radar. So I'm playing really well every week, but they don't know me yet. 2016, I deal with an injury. I play half the season. 2017, I missed the first four games, same injury. 2018, I start the year off. I am the best tackle in the NFL. Unquestioned. And in my mind, or and a lot of others too, 2018, for those 10 straight games, it was a shutout. No hits, no sacks, no pressures, no penalties. I was playing really well. I ended up pancaking a guy in Cincinnati, a linebacker, who just wouldn't go down. He wouldn't die the right way. And I tear my pec. And, man, I thought it was over. I thought my whole season was over. I was able to rehab for those last 6 weeks, come back in the playoffs. We play against Philly here. We get a first-round bye, which also bought me extra time because I wouldn't have been able to play in the wild card. So we get the first-round bye. We play Philly the second round, play against the Rams in the NFC Championship game. And I am balling. The game against the Rams was probably my best game as a New Orleans Saint in the NFC Championship. Unfortunate how that game ended. We know that's the no-call game. I don't even want to open that box of emotion, but 2018 was a special year.
Because you play with Drew, I mean, 5,000 yards a season became commonplace now. It was such a pass happy situation because he was so good and he was so smart. But I don't think people realize, this could be a long one, sorry. 2017, you're 11-5. The team was fifth in yards rushing, first in rush TDs, second in yards per run, 4.7 average. 2018, 13-3, fifth in attempts, seventh in rush yards, first in rushing TDs. 2019, you fell off, but in 2020, you come back, fifth in rush attempts, sixth in yards, first in rush TDs. These are all NFL rankings. So you're 49-15, playing at a level like no other team. Wow. And I think when teams say of the Saints, they go, Drew Brees pass. When this team was good, in my estimation, at its best, they were running the ball well.
Absolutely. No question about it. And it was something that we prided ourselves on. And it was something that Drew prided himself on, too. Like, he wanted us to run the ball because it opened up so much for him in the passing game. If he's able to bring that safety down, like if we're able to do that up front where we're getting 5 yards of carry and that safety, one of those safeties got to come into the box and honor this run, you're under his mercy now because you got to guard his 3-4 eligibles with 3 or 4 people opposed to the extra person looming on the back end. So when we were at our best, it's when we ran the ball effectively, efficiently. Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara, those two was a dynamic duo that took the league by storm. What we were able to do up front in protection, but running the ball, I don't think we got our just due as run blockers.
I feel like the numbers even surprised you a little bit. You hadn't heard them in a
while. No, not really. Yeah. Not really. I know we got busy up front in the run game. I do. We brought over Larry Warford and Eric McCoy came in after Max Unger retired. Like we had the guys that really, and me and Ramczyk were known mostly as pass protectors because we gave up very few sacks a year. But me and Ram were getting busy in that run game, man.
Almost done. I want to talk just about a couple more topics. Last week you spoke to the media. You were the legend for the Saints game, and it was very personal about your family, and it almost felt cathartic for you to kind of talk about it. And it was not an easy road. No. It was not paved with roses all the way around.
Sure.
From a family situation. Was it important to, I don't know, get that out or let them know?
It's still very new to me, and it's hard for me to open up and share stories and be vulnerable like that, because that's never been me. Anything that I've ever dealt with or was going through, I felt like I had to go through and deal with personally or on my own. I never was a guy that wanted to bring my problems into the building or bring what I was going through to work. And something that I really do and did pride myself on, I wanted to show up the same way every day. So a consistent attitude, a consistent demeanor, I felt like that was my part of being a captain. I had to show up a certain way every day. So even when I'm going through some of the hardest times, man, I definitely had my challenges, tall challenges, that I could have brought into the building. But I never wanted to allow myself to do that and have that. So I think it created a relationship in my relationships. It created a space for people to, they know that they can come to me and talk to me, because on a daily basis, I'm going to give them the same effort and energy. I'm going to come to them with a smile, with openness. And man, I've listened to a lot of other people's challenges, and I wore that as well. I put that on my shoulders as well. as the captain, I feel like that was my job.
Family man?
I am.
What's the youngin's situation?
I have twin girls. They're 12 years old. Appreciate it. 12-year-old twin girls, and I have a son. He's 8 years old.
You turned 34. Congratulations. I have two daughters myself. No son, just two daughters, much older. So enjoy the ride. You turned 34 in July. Mm-hmm. Announced your retirement this past spring. What were the signs or indicators for you that it was time? Because obviously, because 34 in this day and age actually is kind of young, but I mean, you still played a ton of years. Yeah. What made you decide?
I mean, my body, for one, my knee. I have been dealing with the knee for many years. It started my third year in the league, so went 9 years with a knee that never got to 100% or relatively close, honestly. So it just really got to a point of no return. I have to get it replaced at some point. So it was the knee, the big factor, and then the kids. As you know, you got two daughters. You know that they grow up, man, every day. It's a new experience. I got new thoughts and new topics, and it was time. You know, it was time for me to be, and I've already was close to my kids, but it's different just being there every day and taking them to school, picking them up from school and all that. I cherish that, and I really wanted to be there to be able to do that.
And finally, let's talk about the next chapter for you. So first off, post-football, you played as a Saint, as I said, 6'5", 305. I went to your Instagram. I kid you not, I thought the first three pictures on your Instagram were LeBron James. Especially the red jacket with the profile. You know what I'm talking about? Has anybody ever said that?
I do.
I mean, I'm going, look at the man getting showing a paper with LeBron on his page, right? I'm going, holy cow, that's him.
That's me.
That's him. So you're still 6'5", but what are you now?
About 270. About 270. Yeah, LeBron is about 6'8", about 265, so... Close. We don't really look that much alike, which is crazy because some kids call me LeBron. Are you LeBron James? No, man. No.
Those pictures, let me tell you. So you got 99,000 followers, soon to be 100,000. Now you do a podcast, Teron and Friends Nightcap Takeover, right? You doing that now? Is that still happening?
No. So the takeover I did was for Nightcap for Shannon Sharp and Ocho Cinco. So I have my own show on YouTube. It's called The Set. The Set with Teron Armstead, with T-Stead. So you can find it on YouTube under my name, Teron Armstead, or my nickname, T-Stead. And we're talking O-line, D-line matchups and breaking down technique, fundamentals, what happened on Sunday and how did it happen. So we all kind of like walk people through the process of what goes into these reps and pass protection and in the run game. I've had a lot of guests come on already. Cam Jordan has been one of my guests. Chris Collinsworth came on. I had Robert Hunt and Rashawn Slater, so a lot of Pro Bowlers as well. So you guys, please go like, comment, share, subscribe to The Set on YouTube. Come join the show.
When did you realize when you had Cam on the show that he was interviewing you and you were not interviewing him?
The man just took over my whole show, bro.
No.
Just the whole – no. Me and Cam, we have a deep relationship. Like, we've been on vacation together in multiple places. So we talked, and that's kind of how the show went. We just really talked. It was more so a conversation opposed to an interview. And we bounced around a lot of different topics. I tried to ask some Saints questions about this 2025 campaign. But, of course, the conversation went wherever he wanted it to go.
And because you are wearing it, the Teron Armstead Foundation.
Yeah, so Teron Armstead Foundation, we're really center focused now. We did a lot of work here when I was in New Orleans, a lot of community work, a lot of events. But now we're center focused on my community center I have in Cahokia, Illinois. And we're doing financial literacy, character development, and life skills. We're teaching like real life practices. We're getting into the weeds of credit and taxes and life skills and character development as well, like proper handshake, eye contact, public speaking. All those things. So non-traditional school teaching, but I think it's really impactful for life, honestly. So
I've done a lot of these. This has been a treat. It's been an honor. Thank you very much, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's our show for tonight. Thanks to Mickey Loomis, to Ron Armstead, of course, Charlie Long in the booth, and we will look for you next week after San Francisco here on the Bullseye Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.
DC sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.